The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. You may recall that once upon a time, Canada's would-be Prime Minister told Canadians that it was time their votes mattered more.
We are committed to ensuring that the 2015 election will be the last federal election using First Past the Post.
You will no doubt be shocked to learn that the 2019 federal election will be held under
First Past the Post.
But electoral reform hasn't vanished in Canada with one broken promise. It's just gone down one level of government.
In just a few weeks, British Columbians will be expected to make a big decision about how we vote. But there's still a lot of confusion about what the options actually are.
Right now, until December 7th, British Columbians are mailing in ballots that will determine the future of elections in the province. But as Trudeau and the Liberals learned, it's one thing to suggest proportional representation and another thing to actually make it the law of the land. So what is at stake when we decide between the two predominant forms of democratic elections? Why did the federal Liberals back down on their promise? What are the drawbacks to a system that on the surface at least will make our votes matter more? Will our current system ever change? And what would the upcoming federal election look like if it did? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. David Moskrop is our political specialist. He's a political scientist and a postdoc research fellow at the Department of Communications in Ottawa. David, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
You are battling a bug today.
Just a light touch of bronchitis. You know, I'm just taking it one day at a time.
And yet still finding the time to talk about the totally arcane world of electoral reform.
Oh, where do you think the bronchitis came from?
So explain to us quickly what is happening in BC right now. What are people voting on?
So people are voting on whether or not they want to change the electoral system to do away with the current first-past-the-post system and adopt a proportional system.
What are the differences between those two?
So in general, a first-past-the-post system is known in the literature as a single-member plurality system. And what that means is in your riding, you elect one member, and that member is the person who gets a plurality of votes, which means the most votes out of the bunch. Doesn't necessarily mean 50%. Sometimes it's 25%. Sometimes it's often it's actually about 40%. But it'll be the person who gets the most votes. So single member, plurality, one person elected with the most votes in that riding. Under PR, votes are winners are determined based on the proportion of votes. So you elect more than one member in a riding, and those members are elected reflect roughly the proportion of votes that parties get. So imagine you elect 10 members in a big riding, and Party A gets 30%, well, then Party A gets 3 members. Party B gets 40%, Party B gets 4 members, and so on like that. And that's a way of saying that we want to make sure that as many votes as possible will contribute to selecting a winner.
That seems like the obvious choice, but yet it's not used anywhere else in Canada.
Proportional systems are the most common systems in the world. They are less common in former British colonies, so including the United States, the United Kingdom, India, and Canada. Australia and New Zealand are exceptions. PR systems are used there. Part of that is just what we call the stickiness of institutions. Once these things take hold, they're pretty tough to upend. Sometimes because it's a lot of work, sometimes because people can't agree to a different system, sometimes because parties have an entrenched interest in keeping the status quo because it works for them. Incidentally, other parties have an entrenched interest in getting rid of the status quo because it doesn't work for them. One of the complicating factors about these sorts of things is that the theory is that proportional representation will work well for parties like the NDP and the Green Party. It'll work less well for parties like the Liberal Party. So you often see support or opposition breakdown on party lines, which complicates things. So it hasn't been used current. It's not used currently in Canada. There's been a couple of votes in the past. Ontario, BC has already had 2 votes. PEI had a vote. Quebec might adopt a version of proportional representation by a legislative action and no referendum. So there have been movements for a long time to change that. And this one might come close.
Well, this was an issue in the 2015 federal election, right?
Yes, it was. One I remember well. So the Liberal Party, when it was in third place, a plucky third place contender, decided that it was going to promise that 2015 would be the last election fought under first past the post.
Right.
you know, when you're in third place, you roll the dice, right?
Well, that was when they also promised to legalize pot.
Yeah, exactly. And one of those two things happened.
I know we don't have it now. So what happened to that promise?
Well, the Liberals broke it. And, you know, the question is, why do they break it? Not to be cynical, but I would argue that they broke it because they looked at the terrain and realized that the system that they probably preferred, the prime minister probably preferred, which is a ranked ballot system called alternative vote, which isn't proportional, was not of interest to anybody in the country. No one wanted it, except for a couple of people in Ottawa who happened to be Liberals. So the Liberals scuttled the promise and said, look, we don't trust PR because of extremists and it's complicated and we couldn't get a consensus and so we're not going to do it. And that was it. You know, the NDP fought, especially Nathan Cullen. They tried to keep it. They tried to keep it on the agenda. They tried to revive the promise, but it's a majority government and the Liberals can kind of do, broadly speaking, what they want. And they certainly didn't want PR. In their defense, PR probably wouldn't work for them very well. So that's, you know, politics. I mean, it really just broke down. I think that they didn't want to do it and they didn't want to expend the political capital to try beyond their sort of half-assed effort.
There must be some public polling done on this, though, outside of these referendums. Do we have any idea what Canadians think?
I don't remember the exact numbers about the 2015 to 2016 effort. I was a part of that pushing for PR. I wrote about it. I appeared before the committee. I remember that no one was paying attention, though. You know, the big takeaway from that whole thing was that people who cared a lot, but there weren't very many people who cared. And this has been an issue with electoral reform going back quite a long time. It's just not an issue that's salient for a lot of people. You know, day to day, people get up, they go to work, they come home, they kind of think about the economy. Maybe they think about transportation when they're stuck in traffic. Maybe they think about healthcare when they got to go visit the doctor or have to wait for surgery. But when would you ever wake up and think about electoral reform?
The day after an election.
The day after an election, if something weird has happened. So in BC, that happened years ago, where the party who formed government had fewer votes than the party who didn't. So it became hyper-salient because people looked and said, well, geez, that doesn't seem right. But that doesn't happen super often, and elections don't happen super often. So it's not really top of mind for people.
Up next.
People look at Austria and they say, well, Austria has PR and Austria has Nazis. Therefore, PR elects Nazis. My response is, Austria doesn't have a PR problem, it has a Nazi problem.
We all have investment goals, and Scotia iTrade can help you reach yours. Access free tools and resources to sharpen your investment skills. Visit ScotiaiTrade.com to start direct investing today. Scotia iTrade, there's a trader in all of us. It seems like proportional representation would be a pretty easy thing to get public support for, though, when there's a lot of ways to sell it, if you know what I mean. Like, this is making sure that the more of your votes count. This is making sure that rural areas are represented fairly and et cetera, et cetera. So why hasn't anybody been able to tap into that enough to leverage change?
Well, BC did. So in 2002 to 2005, when the movement in BC, the contemporary movement, was getting going, the referendum succeeded with 57.7% support. Now, the premier at the time, Gordon Campbell, had set 60% as a threshold for passing, which is high. You almost never get 60% in a vote for anything. So, you know, 58% of people back then said they wanted to change. So there was a model to do it. The model they used, though, was a citizens' assembly that took up the better part of about a year, to come up with a system that they recommended and put to the people. So there was really good education. There was really good publicity. The citizen assembly folks did really good work at becoming advocates and champions of change. And the public was paying attention to this. Those conditions aren't here at the moment. They haven't been here for some time. And so opponents of PR can say, do we really want to roll the dice? Look around the world. We're worried about extremists. Is this really important? And by the way, it's complicated because there isn't just one model of PR. And it's unfamiliar, so it takes a little bit of time to learn. And we, as human beings, kind of conservative by nature. We don't love changing institutions quickly. We don't love the unknown psychologically. So it's a tougher sell than you think.
You've mentioned a couple of times the threat of extremists gaining more power under a change model. How would that work?
One of the things that PR does is lowers the threshold for winning. So under the current model for South Coast, to win, you need concentrated support in a very specific area because you've got to get the most votes in that riding. So basically, you need to have support in the 30s or 40s. Sometimes you can do it with the 20s, but it's usually you need support in the high 30s, low 40s to have a chance at winning. So that's hard for fringe parties to do. If you then lower that threshold because you're electing multiple members from an area, it becomes a little bit easier. So now all of a sudden you can maybe do it with 10%. That happens. You can control it a little bit by introducing thresholds like Germany does. You know, you say, look, no party that receives less than 5% of the vote, 6% of the vote gets a seat. And that can help control for the fringes. But if you don't, then there's not, you know, there's a chance that you'll get a couple of them. But the challenge is, or the question is, you know, are they going to dominate the legislature? And right. The response is no. They aren't. And certainly not in the Canadian context, they're not going to.
Yeah, because as much as I obviously, well, the last time we had you on here, we talked about the scary rise of extremist politicians. But I also feel like that's not an excuse for avoiding proportional representation. And if there are 6% of people who would support somebody disgusting, then, you know, those people do get votes, sadly.
Yeah, so there's two things to consider there. One of them is, well, what happens with those people right now? And the answer is the existing current parties, they try to hijack those parties or they try to pull those parties to the far right or in some cases, the far left.
Right. Like the Ontario Progressive Conservatives.
Like Tanya Greenidge-Allen, like Maxime Bernier, like Kelly Leach or Doug Ford to some extent, right? Because Doug Ford is running on this sort of quasi-populist reactionary politics. So it happens. And, you know, if the thing is, when First Past the Post fails and allows these people through, if you don't think these people should be in power, it's a failure, you get people like Trump.
Right.
You know, Trump wasn't elected under a First Past the Post system because the American Electoral College is kind of different, but he's supported by one. So it raises then the second thing, which is the question of political culture. People look at Austria and they say, well, Austria has PR and Austria has Nazis who get elected. Therefore, PR elects Nazis. And PR is the problem. And my response is, Austria doesn't have a PR problem. It has a Nazi problem.
Right. The problem is that those people exist, not that they vote.
Well, yeah, no, exactly. And Austria has had a Nazi problem in the past. You know, and so what I push back on with opponents of PR is, do you think that we as Canadians have those same problems as Austria, as the far right in Northern Europe? My argument is I don't think we do, not to the same extent. And if we do, do we think it's safer to have them running around in the current parties? I don't think so. Let's bring it out in the open. By the way, a lot of people who make this argument are also people who want to, free speechers who want to say, let's bring this all out into the open, except for when it comes to electoral politics where they want to hide it in the Big Ten parties.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I know now I'm just harping on about proportional representation, but it doesn't make any sense to me to force these people to co-opt parties that don't necessarily speak to them and change them into a way that does.
Right. And one of the things that you get from PR is coalitions. And so the major difference is under a PR system, a majority government like you'd have now in Ontario or Ottawa is uncommon. It probably won't ever happen again, or is unlikely to at least. That means that people have to bargain. They got to come together, got to compromise. I think our politics could use a little more compromise. It's one of the things that PR enables. But it's legitimate as a party to say, well, I'm not going to compromise with extremists. And around the world, we see examples of that. And if you go and look at the top democracies in the world, they're PR democracies. If you go look at the happiest countries in the world, the most trustworthy countries in the world, many of the most wealthy countries in the world, they're PR countries. That doesn't mean that PR causes all of that. You can't make that leap. But it does mean that PR is not going to destroy that, right? PR brings a lot of good, and it doesn't necessarily bring the scary bad that people are saying, because when we look at the best countries in the world, they tend to be PR countries. So something's going right there.
Let's say in an alternate universe, Trudeau and the Liberals kept their promise, and we were heading into the 2019 federal election with proportional representation. How would the next campaign change and what would this election look like?
So one of the things that happens in the current system is that parties aggregate ahead of the election. They come up with a platform ahead of the election. They do the consolidation work ahead of the election. In a PR system, it kind of happens after in the coalition bargaining phase. So, you know, you would probably have a sort of campaign run where parties are trying to find X% they think they can win by looking at groups of Canadians or folks who have certain issues that they care about or other issues. And they would go and target that. They would represent broad values, but they would kind of know where they could get their 20 or 30%, and they'd go after that. And that would be that. But they would also moderate, most of them would moderate enough so that they could be included in government after the election. This is one of the effects of PR in many cases, is that, you know, there's an incentive to be included. So you try not to go off the rails. And then after the election, what you get is the bargaining phase, where parties come together and form a coalition of generally like-minded folks, which is sort of what we had in BC with the Greens and the NDP. It wasn't a PR election, but it kind of ended up looking like one because it was so close. And there was a bargaining phase, and the Liberals tried to woo the Greens, and the NDP tried to woo the Greens, and the NDP won. And they've been governing successfully now for some time. So it kind of looked like that.
And they're pushing for PR, right?
Well, yeah, they both want it. Well, I mean, there's some theories about whether or not they really want it. Like anything, the parties are divided internally. In general, institutionally, officially, yeah, they want it.
And what's your gut feeling? Are they going to get it?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's a coin toss. Or let's say, put it this way, it's sort of like Vegas odds at the craps table against PR. So it's probably, you know, if I had to put odds on it, sort of 51 to 49 favoring the House, which is to say favoring first past the post. You know, we'll see what the ultimate turnout is. It's sort of, it's going up. It'll be in the 40s, it looks like. We'll see who's voting. That's something to watch, you know, not just regionally, but age demographic, because older voters tend to be against it. Younger voters tend to be for it. That's starting to even out a little bit. But I think it's going to be a slight loss, a couple of points maybe. Even getting close is, tells you something about the need for change. But
do you think there's any chance we ever see it federally now that the Liberals backed off from their promise?
No, I don't. I mean, it comes up so infrequently federally. This was the closest I think we've ever really got. Years ago, Pierre Trudeau had a plan to introduce PR into the Senate. I can imagine a world in which someday you had a that floated again, but I think the chances of actually getting it are really, really low. It's just, you know, I mean, the parties who run the country, the Conservatives and the Liberals, have no interest in introducing it. There's just no reason for them. You know, maybe someday we'll have a really weird electoral result and someone will promise it, but it's a long shot.
Until then, this remains an interesting theoretical thought experiment, except in BC.
Except in BC and Quebec, where, you know, but here's the thing. I do think it will happen provincially someday and probably someday fairly soon. It'll happen. And I think it'll either happen in Quebec or in British Columbia. And then after that, who knows? Maybe that will nudge a long-term change. Maybe it'll start at the provincial level. We've seen electoral reform municipally in London, Ontario, for instance. That was a ranked ballot, but the principle is there. So I do think we'll see it provincially, but federally, I'm not betting on it anytime soon.
Thanks, David.
My pleasure.
David Moskrop, political scientist and the author of the upcoming Too Dumb for Democracy, Why We Make Bad Political Decisions. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit ScotiaiTrade.com to start direct investing today. For more from us, you can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can find more of our episodes there. You can also drop us a line. In fact, this episode came from Corey, who asked us to look into what exactly was going on with the BC referendum. You can also find us on social media at Big Story Podcast, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And of course, we are wherever you get your podcasts, especially Apple, who has named The Big Story one of the top Canadian podcasts of 2018. That's probably mostly thanks to your ratings and reviews. So if you ever wondered if they matter to more people than just us. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.